This is the Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine. A transcript of this interview will be available at URL www.fortify.com/silverbullet. To subscribe, see www.cigital.com/silverbullet or www.computer.org/security. This is the 10th in a series of interviews with security gurus. I'm pleased to have with me today the Fortify Software Technical Advisory Board. Gentlemen, please introduce yourselves.
I'm Bill Pugh, a professor at the University of Maryland, and I work on static analysis for finding bugs.
I'm Li Gang. I'm a general manager at Microsoft. I head up Amazon in China.
I'm Marcus Ranum. I'm the CSO at Tenable Network Security. I'm a security products trainer.
Hi, I'm Avi Rubin. I'm a computer science professor at Johns Hopkins University, and I'm working on electronic voting.
Fred Schneider, professor at Cornell University. I work on trustworthy computing.
I'm Greg Morissette at Harvard University. I work on dependent type theory.
I'm Matt Bishop, a professor at the University of California at Davis, and I work in computer security.
I'm Dave Wagner. I'm at UC Berkeley, and I work on software security and electronic voting.
Great. Thanks for being here, guys. Dave, I guess we'll start with you. Part of what's driving static analysis tools in software security is academic research. And I wonder if you could tell us how far ahead is academic research whether commercial-grade tools, what are they doing to catch up with that research edge, and what are they doing to expand the possible applicability of that technology?
Well, great question. The commercial tools have, I think, caught up a lot with academic research. The answer's changed significantly in the past 5 years. About 5 years ago, I would say that the academics were significantly ahead of the commercial tools. The commercial companies these days have really cut up a lot. And there's two areas where you could do a comparison. The first is, how good is your static analysis core at reasoning about programs? And the second is, how thorough is the tool's understanding of security issues? How many rules does it have? And industry has really caught up and completely exceeded academia in terms of the rule set, the understanding of what kinds of security issues your code may have. These days, the academics are pushing primarily on the static analysis core, and I think they're ahead in a couple of ways in analyzing the software with lower false positive rate, but the technology transfer has been pretty fast. So these days, academics are maybe only a year or two or three ahead of what's out there in industry right now.
Thanks. Lee, recently you've been heading up Microsoft China, I guess MSN in China. And I wonder, what's the state of software security awareness in general in China? And will China be ahead or behind the U.S. in software security in 5 years?
I think in general, certainly it's obvious that security awareness level in China is much lower than the U.S., partly because there has been fewer attacks and fewer incidents, or at least publicly reported incidents, and the damage and loss to the system or the society has been lower. So that's why there's less awareness in the public. But among professionals, especially in the banking and military and some other sectors, people are quite educated on security. And recently, there's this breakthrough by a Chinese professor who reduced the complexity to break MD5 and SHAR-1 has certainly generated lots of publicity in China. So for the first time, actually, brought cryptography and security into the public domain where lots of people read about it.
How about the prediction? What do you think? 5 years out.
China will be still behind the U.S. just because the demand and supply curve is way behind here. And it's going to take lots of work and maybe some serious incidents before the demand for security really picked up there.
Thanks. Marcus, you're next. Welcome back to Silver Bullet. What's the biggest lesson you learned while you were writing your latest computer security article, which can be found at, your website, what is that, Rainham.com, and there's a link on the front page of that website to the article, which is basically about Marcus tries to use static analysis tools.
Yeah, so what I did is I took the old firewall toolkit source code that I wrote back in 94, and I ran SCA, Fortify SCA against it, and I was kind of horrified by some of the stuff that I found. A couple of dozen buffer overruns, including some that were sufficiently obvious that I should have been able to catch them at the time. It's kind of a humiliating exercise. But, you know, I've had those kinds of exercises before. One of the things I pointed out in that article was my first encounter with software-based analysis was running SaberC against my code and finding all kinds of horrifying runtime errors. I think the real lesson that I came away with from all that is no matter how good you are, or no matter how good you think you are, you're not as good as you think you are.
Thanks. Avi, I'm going to go to you next. Welcome back to Silver Bullet to you too. So Marcus thinks that security researchers, who he calls vulnerability pimps, is that right, Marcus?
That's correct.
Okay. Have held the field hostage for, about 10 years or so. But you think that breaking systems is an essential part of software security. So how can those two points of view cohere, and how can you guys sit right next to each other over there?
Yeah, before I answer that, I'm wondering if perhaps I can just move a few seats over just to be a little safer. It's my opinion that the people that find exploits in systems who disclose them responsibly, and I think that's one of the keys and perhaps an area where Marcus and I could find some agreement, are doing a great service because, you know, if you can, number one, if you can develop the skills that it takes to find exploits and to discover what they are, that's very good training for building systems in the future that don't have the same vulnerabilities. And I like my students at Johns Hopkins to go through this exercise. Almost all of my assignments in the last few years involve the students creating something, a software artifact, and then an adversarial challenge where they exchange the projects and they have to try to exploit or find vulnerabilities in what the other groups did.
That's a lot of fun to try.
And in fact, it's interesting how this has evolved because as I've gained experience teaching this, I've learned, for example, to tell the students that this is what I'm going to do and to have them try to write defensively because they know the other groups are going to be trying that. I also have incorporated a reward system where you actually get points added onto your score if the other group is unable to find the vulnerabilities that you put in, and you get points you have points deducted if they exploit your system. And so I think that it's mostly pedagogical, that you learn a lot by finding these exploits. There is another reason, which is keeping vendors honest, and I think if you go back to the history, you can find cases where very arrogant vendors who were bullying everyone around were suddenly held accountable for their systems and embarrassed and forced to fix them. I think it's a fine line. I think there's a lot of room for abuse for people who are building exploits, and I bet you that if Marcus and I really sat down and hashed this out, we would pretty much agree on everything. It's just a matter of how you disclose it and when you disclose it and what it is that you go after.
So, Marcus, last word for you. Is Avi, in fact, a vulnerability pimp?
No, Avi's not a vulnerability pimp. If he were just doing it in order to get himself out and famous, then I would question his motives.
Huh. You don't think that voting thing is just about fame and fortune? Okay.
Well, thank you, Marcus.
Fred, you're next. You've always cited the importance of security principles, such as Salzer and Schroeder's principle of least privilege, for example. How can we teach developers, not architects or system guys, but developers, about these principles?
Well, I'm a professor at a university, and so my first reaction to that is it's something we can instruct. But the fact is it's very difficult to go from hearing a rendition of the principles to putting them into practice. And until we're in a position where people in the field have role models who can critique their work and have the time to reflect on what they're doing and to rebuild things, I think it's going to be unlikely that listening to theoretical lectures are going to have that kind of impact. All the same, I think writing about them and getting people to read them is certainly a good start, and it's disappointing how few people have read this Alton Schroeder paper.
Yeah, it's a classic paper. I mean, Matt, you tried to get people to read all the old classic papers by making them electronically available instead of classified and stuck in some thing back in the back. But I guess one of the issues that I'm thinking about is maybe coders who don't come up through an academic background.
The stuff is written about in several places. It's mm-hmm. written about in Matt's book. It's on the web, and it's written in popular books as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a question of sitting through a university course. It's a question of deciding that that's a good way to spend your time. I should mention that I recently have been doing some writing, and it caused me to revisit that paper and write about it. And the ideas are wonderful, but, you know, they're not all perfect, and not all perfect for this millennium. And that's another reason why it might be hard for somebody to sit down with the paper.
Which one do you think is the most dated, showing its age?
There's something about not using common mechanism that needs to be avoided, and in fact, I think rolling your own might limit the communication path that exists with shared mechanism, but I would encourage developers to use other people's good stuff mm-hmm. rather than building their own, because it's easy to get security stuff wrong.
That makes sense. Matt, you're my next victim. So this is a good segue, because educating young minds is about security, something that you've been doing for a long time. Should software security be integrated into all CS courses? Or should it be taught by itself, or both, or neither?
Definitely not neither. ideally, it should be integrated into all courses. However, there is a problem. There's only so much you can teach in a term. So striking a balance is very, very difficult to do. Definitely, there should be a course in it. One thing that might be helpful is in English and in law school and in other places, there are writing clinics that are devoted, they're external to the class, but they can help people improve their writing in the particular discipline. Perhaps doing something like that for programming would help, where people could bring programs or would be required to bring programs, and someone could walk through the program and show them where the potential problems are, or where they or show them how to run a simple static analyzer or something like that would help sensitize people in other courses to the problems of sloppy coding.
Do you think that software security can be used to bolster and possibly improve software engineering pedagogy in general? Have you seen any evidence of that?
The evidence that I've seen typically is when it's taught as a holistic part of software engineering. And in that case, basically you're bolstering everything, not just the security portion.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Bill, you're next. I'm going to change channels a little bit. You've been actively involved in finding bugs in and with open source for quite a while. And instead of asking you whether open source is better or worse, because Fred and I killed that one in 1998, right, Fred?
Yep.
I wanted to know whether you think that open source is better or worse these days than it was before static analysis was being applied to open source.
Well, I think it's still the case that most open source has not yet seriously started to apply static analysis. And so my impression from looking at what I've seen in open source is that most open source projects really haven't started to use it. So I think I'd say it's about the same as before static analysis, because they haven't started applying it yet. That's starting to change. And I think, you know, we're now, one of the problems is these static analysis tools, as of a couple of years ago, there weren't good static analysis tools that you could freely download and would actually give you useful results.
Right. They're certainly improving.
They're certainly improving. I mean, FindBugs is very good in the Java space. And so people are starting to use those. We're starting to get a lot of attention, and people are starting to pay attention to them. So I mean, people are starting to apply them, and I think it's starting to improve the quality of software. But I think we're only starting to see that open source software is starting to use.
Do you think open source might kind of leapfrog the commercial software space, or do you think they'll sort of move along in parallel? Because I at least think that currently commercially you also see little adoption but growing adoption, and so maybe it's in parallel with open source now, but how do you think that'll unfold?
I mean, it's very sporadic. I mean, you see some open source projects that take static analysis very seriously. There have been some projects that have been using find bugs for years, and they're basically clean. We don't. I know some companies that have been using find bugs internally for a while, and they're very, you know, very aggressively go after all the warnings. And lots of open source projects and lots of companies that haven't even begun to think about applying these things. So, you know, it's pretty much all over the map.
Thanks. Greg, I think you're last, so you're batting cleanup here. You're a self-professed programming languages guy, and I wondered how much of the software security problem would disappear with better languages. And are languages like JavaScript and PHP and Python and Ruby helping, or are they hurting?
Well, the problem doesn't go away with better languages, but many problems are minimized. Anybody who's tried to do static analysis for C or C++ knows it's a world of difference between that and Java. And I think we can still do a lot better by having much higher level, better structured languages, not just for security, but for software engineering in general. But there's no, as you would say, a silver bullet there.
Well, there's a silver bullet now. You're on it.
So I don't think that would help a whole lot. It is interesting to see the rise of all the scripting languages in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. And they tend to be very dynamic in nature, which makes things like static analysis hard. Not a lot of thought given to designing the language to support static analysis.
Well, there's a pretty broad range, for example, between, say, JavaScript at one end, the good end, believe it or not, versus PHP.
Or Perl, say.
Or Perl, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Perl I don't even count as a language.
I completely agree, yeah. But you know, I think you're going to see more scripting languages like Python and JavaScript becoming tamed to some degree, in part because they'll get benefits both from static analysis and also performance benefits from being able to do a better job of compilation or interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that languages do enough these days to try to address the trust boundary issue when you're thinking about design and you got a client-server model between, say, what's on the server versus what's out there and should not be trusted?
No, I mean, we make the same mistakes over and over again in all those designs. You know, over and over we're building something like an operating system, be it a web browser or a web server, where we want extensions or an editor. We want some sort of extension, so we add a scripting language to support that. And we don't think hard about having a proper notion of isolation or of resources or other things like this. And you see that happening every time one of these scripting languages springs into an application. So a lot more architectural thought needs to be given to the design of systems and the integration of language technology into them.
Well, thanks all you guys. I appreciate your input here. This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine. Thanks to Fortify Software for providing access to their technical advisory board. Subscribe to IEEE S&P today at www.computer.org/security/BSI-stub. Show notes, links, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.sigital.com/silverbullet.